They're the shortest house in Westeros.
And the blondest people there.
And they live in a giant rock. It's now time to talk about House Lannister of Game of Thrones because your geek history lesson is now in session.
Welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And I'm Jason Lion Roar Inman. Welcome to your Mind University, because we are the podcast where we take a character of pop culture and other stuff and we break it down for you in less than an hour. And guys, I don't know if you know, but Game of Thrones is back.
It's a true and scientific fact.
It is invading our lives like the zombie army from the north. And so we decided, if you haven't listened to our podcast before, every year we break down a different part of Game of Thrones history. Mm-hmm. And this year we decided to focus on House Lannister.
Yes.
And let's be honest, we are not Game of Thrones experts. We've read the books.
We got some Stark knowledge.
We got some stuff. We love the Starks. We love the winter. We love the dogs. But we don't know much else. So we decided to bring on what we consider a true Game of Thrones expert.
A Westerosi historian.
Yes. Now, our Game of Thrones expert, she has run a Game of Thrones podcast. She has a Game of Thrones Tumblr called Good Queen Alysanne. Welcome to the podcast, lover, historian, and expert Game of Thrones person, Nina Friel.
Yay! Hey, everyone.
Now, this is really cool, Nina, because you are a Geek History Lesson fan, too.
I would say I'm a Geek History Lesson super fan, yeah.
Well, I'll take that.
Now, yeah, Nina, it's super exciting.
Nina, how long have you been into the Game of Thrones?
Since 2012 was when I got introduced to the books. I started reading them really in earnest in the beginning of 2013, and then I've just been a mad woman since then. So.
Yeah. Well, because I've seen you have written, like, detailed essays about certain aspects.
Yeah, several thousand word essays.
I guess, well, because you are a law student in real life, correct?
Yes. So I am, actually, I will be graduating this year. So,
so you'll be a real lawyer next season.
Something like that.
Your business card will have to be Lawyer Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm pretty much like lawyer / Game of Thrones expert.
No, and I got it. First lawyer of Westeros.
Nailed it.
All right, Nina. So you are going to take us through all the tenets of House Lannister and tell us all about it. So we are prepped for everything Tyrion when we hit the season premiere.
Awesome. Yeah, I am ready to teach you all of the Lannister history.
All right, great. Well, let's walk into the world of Westeros, Nina, and take it away and teach us. And if you have a meet cute or a 10-cent origin in your lesson, then you get double stars.
Well, then be prepared to hand out some double stars, because I do have a 10-cent origin. 10-cent origin of House Lannister. They are the paramount lords of the Westerlands, and traditionally the Wardens of the West, as well as being called Shields of Lannisport, but doesn't really seem to mean anything on top of just being the Lords of the West.
That's just a name.
It's just a title.
Okay.
It's just a title, Shield of Lannisport.
It's like being the King of England, you know? It's just a title, really.
It's funny because it's true.
Their seat is Casterly Rock. Their sigil is a gold roaring lion on a crimson field. Their words are, hear me roar, and yes, the exclamation point is part of the words. Okay. They had an ancestral sword. It was called Bright Roar. It's now lost. I'll tell you a little bit more about that.
Okay.
Their members are known for having golden blonde hair, emerald green eyes, and generally being tall and handsome. That is a Lannister trait.
So they're Swedes.
Okay. Oh, they are. They're Swedes.
Blonde,
okay.
Tall, and handsome, yeah.
And bastards of the Westerlands are given the surname Hill. Just the way that in the north they're given the surname Snow.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Hill. And now I'm thinking of all the people I know with the last name Hill.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. It's Snow in the north. It's Hill in the west. It's Rivers in the Riverlands. It's Storm in the Stormlands. It's Stone in the Vale. Sand in Dorne. And Flowers in the Reach. And Waters in the Crownlands.
Oh. So if you're a bastard child of the Reach, you're called Flowers.
Yeah.
Like the Night of Flowers, right?
No. Not like that.
No. No, no, no. Not at all. Not like Danny Rand of Iron Fist.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
I'm calling him Iron Flowers on Twitter right now.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. I saw that, and that was...
Awesome.
As far as a meet cute, so I mentioned I started in 2012. I was at an internship in 2012. One of the girls working in the office where I was said, you should definitely read these books. They're really dense, but they're really good. So I was like, you know what? Because I was kind of aware of the show at that point. I was like, maybe I'll read them.
But you hadn't watched it yet.
I hadn't watched it. I was just kind of aware of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, whatever. So I started reading the first one and hated it. I picked
really?
It up.
Really?
Yes, because I don't read a lot of fiction, A.
Okay.
And I don't read a lot of fantasy, even within fiction. Mm-hmm. So I started reading the prologue of A Game of Thrones, and I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't get it. I have to walk away. January of 2013, my family and I went on vacation on a very long plane ride. I'm going to try A Game of Thrones again, because it's happened before where there's been things that I hated, and I went back to them and I loved them.
Okay.
So I picked it up again, and I just plowed through that book. I loved it. And all through this last semester of college in 2013, I just read the books voraciously.
Nice.
So that was how I met the Lannisters and also all of those other Westeros.
Well, before we get into your lesson, I know we're making you teach a House Lannister lesson. Who's your favorite house?
Ooh, are we talking just the Paramount houses or are we talking every house in Westeros?
Let's leave it simple and go Paramount.
I really like the Arryns.
Interesting.
The Arryns of the Vale.
I've never heard that choice before. Okay. All right. You truly,
yeah.
I think you just proved your expertise because you're just like, you know who the unsung heroes of Game of Thrones? The Arryns.
Yeah, you know what? It makes sense because Jon Arryn's like a smart guy who just wants to be left alone and
yep.
do his smart guy stuff with his crazy wife.
Yep.
Like, that, you know, that's a solid choice.
He just wants to throw people out of Moondor. It's all good.
Yeah, well, I think that's really her thing, but.
All right. That's interesting. Okay, cool. I also wanted our listeners to know any bias you might have against the Lannisters.
I think everybody has bias against the Lannisters.
Well, and I think, so I wanted to sort of go through the whole Lannister history because
sure.
Lannisters do a lot in the 8,000 or so years that they've been hanging around Westeros.
Well, let's jump right into the History 101. And Professor Nina, please teach students Ashley and Jason.
I certainly will. So if we go way, way, way back, this is between 10 and 12,000 years before the main series. The Lannisters were not the first family in the Westerlands. The Crakehalls, the Rains, and the Westerlings, all older families. They're also not the first really great family in the Westerlands.
That's
right. The Casterlys.
Of Casterly Rock.
Yeah.
Of Casterly Rock.
Uh-oh. Now, foreshadowing.
Now, the Casterlys start when a man named Corlos, the son of Caster, is defending his village's sheep from a lion. And he... back to its den at the base of what would become Casterly Rock. He slays the lion and its mate, but then he sees that there's cubs, and he doesn't want to kill them. And because he was merciful to the cubs, the old gods showed Corlos that there were thick gold veins running through Casterly Rock. Obviously,
cool.
Corlos really likes this, so
okay.
he moves his family in, and over many generations, they start carving out of home in Casterly Rock.
Literally. Carving out.
Literally carving out a home.
On top of the gold.
Well, they're sort of mining the gold and making a home as well.
Okay.
Now then, somewhere around 10,000 years ago, roughly, we get a fellow by the name of Lan the Clever. Have you heard of Lan the Clever? Maybe.
No, I'm not as clever as him.
I feel like that's a name that gets thrown around in discussions where they're like, be like this person or remember what this person did.
Well, Lan the Clever is the heroic ancestor of House Lannister. And he is the one who tricks the Casterlys rock.
Ah.
Oh, he tricks the Casterlys out of the rock.
Right, he tricks
like,
them out.
He's like Loki?
Yeah.
sort of.
Okay. How does he do it?
Well, that's the thing. Nobody knows. There's a bunch of different stories, though.
Okay, what are the stories? I'm curious.
So in the one story, Lan coats himself in butter, goes through a crevice in Casterly... I'm not making this up. Goes through a crevice in Casterly Rock and then basically starts messing with the Casterlys. He starts stealing gold from one Casterly brother and putting it in the room of another Casterly brother. He starts making weird noises in the hallways, whispering threats in their ears at night. Eventually, the Casterlys think, oh, there must be ghosts here. We got to move out. And they do.
And they don't see all this dripped butter on the floor anywhere.
Not at all. In other stories, he lets a pride of lions into Casterly Rock, and they eat the Casterlys.
Well, that's pretty cruel. Jesus.
In other stories, it gets worse. Okay. In other stories, he lets mice and vermin into Casterly Rock and have to move out. And in what is definitely the worst story, Lan sneaks into Casterly Rock, rapes the Casterly maidens as they're sleeping, and then claims the rock through the children that they have because they have golden hair like he does.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
This is a story told to Lannister children.
So that explains so much.
It kind of just depends on, like, if you were in Westeros and you heard all three of those stories, it kind of just seems like what type of person you are is the one you would pick.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I definitely pick the butter one.
All of this is happening thousands of years ago. So the stories get changed over several centuries. At some point, he gets Casterly Rock and he starts House Lannister. Now, Lan himself is never called King of the Westerlands. His descendants are, though. The first Lannister king is a man by the name of Lorien, who is unsurprisingly called Lorien the Lion. Mm-hmm. And over many, many centuries, the Lannisters start conquering their neighbors. So, you know, the Lannisters aren't the only kings in town. They start beating their neighbors and or marrying their daughters in order to consolidate power.
Like you do.
It's the
Westeros 101. You kill the people, you take their daughters. Oh!
Exactly. Now, important thing to point out with the Lannisters. The Lannisters are originally a first men house, because everyone was in Westeros at that point. Mm-hmm. The first men are the first human race to come over Westeros through a land bridge that eventually was broken and became the Broken Arm of Dorne. So the Lannisters were first men. Now, somewhere between 2 and 6,000 years ago, Andals from Andalos in Essos start arriving on Westerosi shores. Obviously, the Andals want a piece of the Westerosi action, mm-hmm. so they start beating their way and or marrying their way into the rulerships of all of the kingdoms save the North.
The Westeros way, hey, oh!
Exactly. So the Lannisters are no exception. At first, they try to beat the Andals back. So there's a king called Tybalt the Thunderbolt who kills the first invading Andal warlord in the West.
Heck yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's subsequent kings who say, no, we're more okay with the Andals. So Tyrion III and Gerald II arrange marriages between the daughters of Westerland nobles mm-hmm. and subsequent Andal warlords, and make sure to take hostages from the Andals to serve in Casterly Rock, just to really integrate the Andal first man relationship.
Nina, can I ask a quick question?
You absolutely can.
Can you explain to us who are the Andals? Are they just another tribe from across the sea, or who are they?
So the Andals, good question. So the Andals are a race of people who come from a land called Andalos, which is in Essos. Essos is the eastern continent on the unnamed planet that this takes place in.
Yes.
So originally, Westeros has first men. That's one kind of race. Mm-hmm. Somewhere between 2 and 6,000 years ago, Andals, different race, start coming over into Westeros. There's a third race called the Rhoynar that came over about 1,000 years ago, but that's a entirely different story.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So now the Andals are in Casterly Rock. Got it.
Well, sort of. So the King Gerald III, King of the Rock, dies without a son. He only has one daughter. You might think that the Lords of the Westerlands would crown his daughter queen, but no. They give the crown and the Lannister name to her Andal husband, Joffrey Lydon. So he becomes King Joffrey Lannister. We don't even know.
It's a lot like real life history where you're like, look, all of the kings of basically all of Europe were not originally from there. They all intermarried.
It's a broken line.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you hear that the Lannisters today are descended in the female line from Lan the Clever, this is why. Because the male line from Lan the Clever ended with Gerald III.
Interesting.
Slackers.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, there are a bunch of Lannister kings over many, many, many centuries. I should also mention that the Lannisters, I mentioned before that they had an ancestral Valyrian steel sword mm-hmm. called Brightroar. Well, I'm putting ancestral in air quotes. They bought it about 500 years ago.
Okay.
About a century before the Doom of Valyria. And they lost it about a century later. Because King Tommen II of the Rock decided immediately after the Doom, well, you know what? I bet there's treasures in Valyria. I'm going to go get them. So he sails with a great fleet to the recently destroyed Valyrian freehold with Brightroar and is never heard from again.
Yay!
And yeah. just for everybody out there, we explained this in one of our previous lessons. And Nina, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Valyria is that really cool country where all that really awesome steel comes from. And they're the people that conquered the dragons, right? Or am I wrong on that?
No. Okay. So Valyria was, the Valyrian freehold was the Asosi superpower for about 5,000 years. And it was destroyed in this great cataclysmic event called the Doom of Valyria around 400 years before where we are in the series.
Okay.
Think of Valyria as kind of the Rome of Essos. Big empire. The rulers were the dragon lords. So it was a freehold of ruling families that were known as dragon lords. They had dragons. The only dragon lord family that escaped were the Targaryens because they left about a decade before the Doom.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And so we had a Lannister go to Valyria and he's never heard from again.
Right. Now, Valyria had just been destroyed when he went. He thought he was going to pick up some treasures. Maybe he did, but also he didn't bring them back.
He might have got a face full of lava. Yeah. We don't know.
Or gold.
Who knows? Now, the last Lannister king was a man by the name of Loren, L-O-R-E-N. Loren the First. He's king of the Rock when the Targaryens arrive and start their conquest. Mm. Now, he allies with King Mern the Ninth Gardener, the king of the Reach. They say, you know what? Together, we have by far the largest standing army in Westeros. So why don't we put our forces together, we'll go out in the battle, and we will just smash the Targaryen host, we'll drive them back to Dragonstone, everything will be great. You know what the worst way to fight dragons is, though?
Marrying their daughters?
No, it's by gathering a large standing army. Because dragons will fly above large standing armies and burn the standing armies.
They should have married the daughters.
Dragons are very hard to kill.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happens in a battle that becomes known as the Field of Fire. All three Targaryen dragons are loosed for the first and only time during the conquest. And King Mern the Ninth is burned alive, as are all of his sons and grandsons.
Oh.
Loren escapes. Loren Lannister escapes, but he is captured by Aegon Targaryen's forces. Now Aegon says to him, listen, you bend the knee to me, swear that I'll be king, I will confirm you as Lord of Casterly Rock. You will have essentially the same powers that you have now and all of your same vassals. I'll just be king over you. Mm. And Loren says, that sounds great. So
smart man.
I'm in.
Yep. So he becomes the first Lannister Lord of Casterly Rock and the first Warden of the West.
Hmm. Interesting.
Nice. Yeah. So moving a little bit ahead, Lannisters are involved a little bit in realm politics, but not a whole heck of a lot. They mostly keep to themselves.
So the Lannisters kind of like back off, is what you're saying.
Well, they're not. The Tullys are really eager for court places. The Lannisters aren't. The Baratheons are tied by blood. The Lannisters aren't. They're just sort of content to sit at home and do the same thing they've been doing for 8,000 years.
Look at their gold. Yeah, I get it.
But they are heavily involved in the first big Westerosi civil war under the Targaryens, which is the Dance of the Dragons. The dance is basically a succession crisis where no one's really sure if the legal precedent that a king can choose an heir comes before the legal precedent that a son comes before a daughter. Mm-hmm. There's war, there's a lot of fighting. Most of the Targaryen dragons die. But there are two sides, the Blacks, who support Princess Rhaenyra, and the Greens, who support Aegon II. The Lannisters are very big green supporters. So you have Jason Lannister.
Hey!
And it's that meme that you are. So, and
you know, he's an ancestor of mine, just saying, throwing it out there.
And his twin brother, Tyland Lannister, big green supporters.
Did you say Tyland?
Tyland, T-Y-L-A-N-D.
Cool. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Lannisters are big into their Ty names and their soft G-J names. Tyland becomes master of coin during the war, and he says, you know what, let's divide the Targaryen gold into four parts. We'll send a quarter to Old Town, which is one of the biggest cities in Westeros. That's where the Dowager Queen's family was from. We'll send a quarter to the Iron Bank in Braavos. We'll keep a quarter here. We'll use that to pay for gold and sell swords. We'll use that to pay for sell swords and bribes and anything else we need. And then I will take a quarter to Castle Rock for safekeeping.
Of course.
Which he does. And then you never again.
Mm. And then what happens, Nina?
You never hear about this gold again. So, yeah. I'm not saying the Lannisters stole Targaryen gold, but it does mysteriously disappear from the record.
Okay. All right.
Now, Jason Lannister, unfortunately, is killed in battle, as are the two subsequent commanders of the Lannister forces during the dance. Even worse, Dalton Greyjoy, who is known as the Red Kraken, took the opportunity of the war to start reaving the Westerlands.
Oh.
So... Yeah, so
it's
he
the Westeros
sacks
way, A-O!
Yeah, for real.
So he sacks Lannisport, which is the big city in the Westerlands.
Mm-hmm.
He seizes Fair Isle, which is a big island off the coast of the Westerlands. And he takes hundreds of women for salt wives, including Jason's favorite mistress and their daughters.
Oh.
Yeah. Poor you.
The favorite mistress.
Not she the had, favorite mistress.
She had nothing to do with this.
He didn't, however, Dalton, think about Lady Joanna Lannister, who was Jason's widow. She allies with the Admiral of the Reach, says, hey, can you lend me some of your ships? She puts her soldiers on those ships, sends them to the Iron Islands, and just burns and destroys lots and lots of people and things.
That's a woman right there.
She is. She also captures one of Dalton's salt sons, and she gelds him and makes him her son's fool.
Oh.
Don't mess with that lady.
Yeah.
Everybody always picking on the Ironborn.
Also, somewhat badly for the Lannisters, Tyland, the one who had sent gold to Casterly Rock,
mm-hmm.
Well, Rhaenyra's forces eventually take the capital, and Tyland is blinded, mutilated, and gelded to find out where he had sent that gold. But he doesn't break. He doesn't tell them, and eventually... he becomes Hand of the King after all of this happens.
Really?
Wow.
He's missing like half his parts. How does that even
gonna happen to that's what's gonna happen to Greyjoy.
They're just like we
Theon's gonna come out okay in the end.
They're like, I guess if this guy can take all this, he could take stupid peasants. All right, Hand of the King.
Make him
be the guy that talks to all the goat farmers once a month.
Now, the Lannisters after the Targaryen Civil War, that's known as the Dance, again, they kind of keep to themselves for a little while. They do fight for the winning side in the next big civil war, which is the first Blackfyre Rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
They fight for the so-called Red Dragons under Daeron II. That's Lord Daemon Lannister and his son, Sir Tybalt. We hear about them in the first of the Duncan Egg Tales that takes place after the first Blackfyre Rebellion, they attend a tourney in Ashford.
Now, the Duncan Night Tales, the Duncan Egg Tales, those are those weird short stories that George R.R. Martin wrote, correct?
So, yeah. So, the Tales of Duncan Egg are a series of novellas. They start to take place about 100 years before the main series, and they follow Dunk, who's also known as Sir Duncan the Tall. He's a hedge knight who becomes eventually Lord Commander of the Kingsguard.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aegg, who is also known as Prince Aegon, he eventually becomes King Aegon V.
He's the crazy
They become
one.
Good friends in the first book, and then the series just tracks all of their adventures together.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, they're great stories. There's three of them right now. George R. R. Martin hasn't said how many he plans, but there's a bunch in the works, so should be exciting.
We'll see him 20 years from now.
Yeah, for real.
Just when the Winds of Winter comes out.
Yep.
So God, jokes. Now, that Daemon, who fought in the first Blackfyre Rebellion, he dies in 210 AC, and he's succeeded by his son Tybalt, only to have Tybalt die 2 years later under mysterious circumstances and leave his three as Lady of Casterly Rock.
He left his three children as?
No, his three-year-old daughter.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Unfortunately, Lady Sorrel also dies less than a year after she becomes Casterly Rock.
I think somebody's sneaking around that building with butter on.
Well, funny you should mention, because a lot of people pin those deaths of both Tybalt and Sorrel on Tybalt's younger brother, Gerald Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, whether or not he actually murdered his brother and niece, who knows, but he does go on to rule for 31 years and become known as Gerald of the Golden. This is the grandfather of Tywin Lannister.
Ah, okay.
Ah, so now we can relate them to people that we know.
To actors we have seen.
Yeah.
Now, Gerald marries Lady Rohan Weber, who's a major character in the second of the Duncan Egg Tales, The Sworn Sword, although that takes place before her Lannister marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And they have four sons together, Tywald, Tyon, Tydos, and Jason.
Hey, another you're Jason. Alive again.
It's a good name.
Jason Lannister. Well, they had to break up the tie names, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
So their eldest son, Tywald, died in 233 AC, fighting in a rebellion that was known as the Peak Uprising. The Peaks are a family of assholes in the Reach that I won't talk about.
That's the best description you've used this entire podcast.
That'd make a great t-shirt.
The assholes of the Reach.
Yeah.
They really are. The Peaks are the ones. So you know how the Manderleys, House Manderley, the good friends of the Starks, they used to live in the Reach. The Peaks are the ones that kicked them out.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah. So the eldest son, Tywald, he died fighting in that rebellion. Now, Tywald had been betrothed to a woman who was very important in Lannister history, Lady Ellen Rayne. Now, Lady Ellen was the daughter of the Lord of Castamere, and the Rains are by far the most important and wealthiest bannermen of the Lannisters.
Is that is that like the song? The Rains of Castamere?
Is that like what? Well, funny you should mention, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, stop jumping ahead.
Good student, but also let me get to it. So Lady Ellen Rayne was betrothed to Tywald, and she doesn't like the idea that she's not going to be Lady of Casterly Rock anymore. So she convinces Tywald's twin brother Tyon, who's now heir to Casterly Rock, to marry her. And despite the fact that he's already betrothed, he does. So he marries her in 235, and his younger brother Tydos marries a woman named Jane Marbrand. Tydos is the father of Tywin Lannister.
Okay.
Wow. Say that again. How do you... Tydos?
T-Y-T-O-S.
Okay, Tytos.
Tytos Lannister.
Okay.
Tito Lannister.
T-T! T-squared.
Now, there was no Lady Lannister around at this time, so Lady Ellen becomes acting Lady of Casterly Rock, mm-hmm. and she installs lots and lots of Rayne relations in Casterly Rock.
Hmm.
In fact, the Casterly Rock Fool called her a sorceress because she made it rain inside the rock all year. Terrible puns on the Westeros staple.
I kind of imagine the comedy scene of Westeros is just not up to par. I don't, you know.
No. There's a good chance you're going to get your head chopped off at any moment.
Yep, yep.
Not so much. Unfortunately for Lady Ellen, the following year, Tyon also dies fighting in the short fourth Blackfyre Rebellion. Now, well, don't feel too bad, because Lady Ellen then tries to seduce Tytos Lannister, who, remember, is already married, into putting aside his wife and marrying her so that she can become Lady of Casterly Rock eventually.
All right.
Gotta admire that hustle.
Well, Tytos is so overwhelmed by the fact that she tried to seduce him that he runs to his wife and confesses everything that happened. And Jane Marbrand says, you know what, that's fine, but also we have to take care of the situation. So she goes to her father-in-law, Gerald Lannister, and says, you need to get rid of this woman. She's clearly crazy. And Gerald says, you know what, you're right. So he kicks the reins out of Casterly Rock, and he marries Ellen to the 55-year-old Lord Walderon Tarbeck.
Ew.
The Tarbecks are an ancient family, but very impoverished. So Gerald thinks, got my hands rid of Ellen, we're all good.
That's excellent Foley work of wiping your hands.
I didn't know if that would come up or not. Now, in 242 AC, Tytos and Jane have their first son, Tywin Lannister.
I know that guy.
Yeah, you do know that guy. And 2 years later, Lord Gerald dies and Tytos becomes Lord. Now, Tytos is known as the Laughing Lion because he's very genial and he wants everybody to like him. Unfortunately,
he's an asshole.
He's very weak and indecisive, and he lets anyone take out huge loans in Casterly Rock, and they never have to repay them.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. This is a big problem. He has four sons with Jane: Tywin, Kevin, Tygett, and Geryon.
Kevin kind of stands out in Westeros side for me.
A little bit.
There's a Stark named Frank. Yeah, Frank Stark.
There's one named Ned.
Yeah, so I don't know. Okay, continue.
They also have one daughter, Jenna. And in 252 AC, Jenna is betrothed to the second son of Walder Frey, the still living Walder Frey.
Wow. That dude
is old.
Yeah.
But Tywin thought that wasn't a good enough match for the only daughter of Casterly Rock. And despite being only 10 years old, he publicly denounced it at the feast that it was announced at.
All right.
Now, in 260 AC, at the beginning of the War of the Nine Penny Kings, Tytos's last surviving brother, Jason, rides out to lead the Westerland forces, but is killed in action.
Aww.
I know. And it's around this time that Tytos forms House Clegane of Gregor and Sandor fame.
Oh, okay.
All those tall warrior types.
Yeah, so the story is that in a fall year, Lord Tytos came between a lioness and her prey. The lioness goes to attack him, but luckily for Tytos, the kennel master of Casterly Rock runs up with his dogs and saves him. And in gratitude, Tytos gave the man, who's called Clegane, lands and took his son as a squire. That son is the father of Gregor and Sandor Clegane.
Oh,
interesting.
Okay.
I didn't know that. That's really cool.
We're all sorts of fun facts today. Now, Tywin, when he's a young boy, to serve as a page and cupbearer to King Aegon V. Again, that's Aeg from the Duncan Egg Tales. Mm-hmm. And while he's at court, he becomes best friends with Prince Aegon, Mad King Aerys II, and Stefan Baratheon, the father of Robert and Stannis and Renly.
So he becomes best friends with the prince and a Baratheon?
And a Baratheon, yep. They're all living at court, and they are all best friends.
Wow.
And they fight together in the War of the Nine Penny Kings. And Tywin
is...
I'll tell you what happened. Tywin is given the honor of knighting Aerys for valor.
Okay.
Yeah, the ironing is delicious. So in 261 AC, fresh from the War of Nine Penny Kings, Tywin quashes the Rhaen Tarbeck Rebellion. Now, here's the problem. Tywin returns to the West after the war, and he demands, all right, everyone who owes money to Casterly Rock, pay up or send hostages.
Wow.
Now,
collateral. Yeah. Real collateral.
It really is. This is actually how Kevin gets his wife. Harris Swift, the Knight of Cornfield, can't pay up, so he sends his daughter Dorna, who eventually marries Kevin.
Aww.
I know, it's so cute. And, the Rains just kind of laugh this off, but Lord Walderon Tarbeck, Ellen's husband, rides to Casterly Rock to protest having to repay. Tywin sees him and throws him in a dungeon in Casterly Rock.
Typical.
Ellen is pissed. So he kidnaps three Lannisters, two Lannisters of Lannisport, who are pretty distant cousins, and Stafford Lannister, the son of Tywin's uncle Jason. Well, Tytos finds out about this, and he's really mad at Tywin. He commands Tywin to release Walderon. He apologizes to Walderon. He forgives the debts, And he organizes the trade of hostages at a series of parties at Castamere, the Reign Seat.
That's what I love to do at parties, exchange hostages.
Exchange hostages, yeah.
Well, Tywin is very angry about this. So late in 261, he sends more messages to Castamere and Tarbeck Hall, and he summons Ellen's brothers, Roger and Reynard Reign, as well as and Lady Ellen Tarbeck, to Castle Rock, as he puts it, to answer for your crimes.
Now tell us those names again.
Okay, so that's there's the brothers Reign. So that's okay. Lord Roger Reign, who's called the Red Lion,
all right.
And then Reynard Reign.
Okay.
And then Walderon Tarbeck and his wife Ellen, who was formerly Ellen Reign.
There we go.
Now they get this message and refuse, and they say, "You know what? We don't think that you should be our liege lord anymore." Well, you can imagine what sort of reaction this prompts in Tywin. So he gathers a force of 5,000 men, including 300 knights, and he starts for Tarbeck Hall. Tarbeck Hall, as I mentioned, the Tarbecks are an impoverished family, so they send out a very small force of household knights to fight Tywin's forces. Well, they're just butchered.
Oh, no.
And Tywin orders anyone wearing the silver and blue star of House Tarbeck to be killed. Walderon was also on the field. Tywin beheads him and his sons, puts their heads on spikes, and marches to Tarbeck Hall.
Ouch.
So Lady Ellen is at Tarbeck Hall. She had used all of that nice Lannister money to build up Tarbeck Hall's defenses. However, once Tywin got started, the ancient keep was quickly destroyed. And Lady Ellen either died with her son Tyon Tarbeck in the collapse of Tarbeck Hall, or she was hanged from the highest window of Tarbeck Hall. There's two different accounts in two different sources. We're not really sure which one. The point is, Lady Ellen died when Tarbeck Hall was destroyed.
Yeah, she's dead.
I don't know which would be worse, really.
Tywin Lannister then orders the keep burned. Also, there may have been daughters of Lady Ellen, who were sent to the Silent Sisters. This is semi-canonical information, something George R. R. Martin read at a convention. According to this source, Ellen's daughters, Sorel and Rohan Tarbeck, had their tongues torn out and were sent to the Silent Sisters. That's the group of holy women who dedicate themselves to the stranger. They put their bodies for burial.
Mm.
Rohan had a son, a three-year-old, who was called the Last Lord Tarbeck. The rumors are that he became a bard in Essos, but in actuality, he was probably thrown down a well by Amory Lorch, who was one of...
I like to think that he heard the call of the theater.
Rather than being thrown down a well, I'd like to think that.
Yeah.
It gets worse, though, because Tywin's force, which is 3 to 5 times as strong as that of the Reigns, defeats the Reign forces. And Lord Roger Reign flees with a crossbow bolt through his shoulders to his seat at Castamere. And Tywin is hot in pursuit. Now let me explain a little bit about what Castamere is. Castamere is the seat of House Reign, and most of it is underground.
Okay.
What happened was, as the Reigns, so they have lots of gold and silver mines. As the Reigns would exhaust their mines, they would turn the old mines into living and working spaces.
That's cool.
Very defensible. Yeah.
Oh, isn't it defensible? Yeah. So 90% of Castamere is underground. There's just a small keep above ground. Into Castamere, Reynard Reign, because Roger is too wounded to leave, his more than 300 person family, household, and followers. I cannot stress enough that most, if not all of these people, are non-combatants and wounded, because all of the fighters would have been upstairs with that slaughtered Reign host.
Okay.
I just want to underline that because of what happens next. So Tywin gets there, and he realizes, I can't attack in Castamere. It would take way too long, and if my men go in, they'd be butchered in the halls of Castamere. And I can't starve them out. That would take too long. So what he does is he orders all of the mine entrances to be completely sealed, packed tight, no one can get out. And then he diverts a fast nearby stream into the nearest mine entrance. Now again, it's too packed tight for any people to get out, but it's not packed too tight for any water to get in. The water finds its way through the seals and drowns the rains inside Castamere.
Oh, that's bad.
It's actually, I mean, that's...
Tactically, it's very smart.
Tactically, it's very smart, Tywin, but it also proves that Tywin just, man, I'm glad he got, spoilers, killed in a...
Toilet.
In a privy.
And he orders the keep to be burned afterward. Wow. Yeah. What makes it worse is that it was reported from some of the guards that they heard shouts and screams coming from the mine entrances when this was happening. Ooh. Which, I mean, don't really blame you because you're literally being drowned alive. Now, the Rain Tarvik Rebellion is the inspiration for the Rains of Castamere.
There we go.
Because there is a line in it that says, in a coat of gold or a coat of red, a lion still has claws. That refers to the Rain Sigil, which is a red lion with a forked tail.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now explain real quick, what is the Rains of Castamere, just in case somebody out there doesn't know what it is.
Okay, so the Rains of Castamere is what I guess you would call the Lannister pride song.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song that's associated with House Lannister, and it basically, a little bit, sort of in a subtle way, tells the story of this Rain Tarvik Rebellion. And it's something that the Lannisters use to show off how terrible and mighty House Lannister is and how terrible revenge they will take against anyone who wrongs them.
Mm-hmm.
And during, I think it's the third season of the show, when Robb Stark is about to be, spoilers, murderized.
I think we're way past spoilers time.
it was 16 years ago that book was written. It is not spoilers
there
anymore.
There you go. This song heralds the beginning mm-hmm. of his end.
Yes. Now, you might say that the Rain Tarvik Rebellion was a series of war crimes on the part of Tywin. And that
I would say
yes, Your Honor.
But you know who really likes what Tywin did there?
Other
His old friend,
Aegon.
Prince Aerys.
Oh, there you go.
Okay,
yeah. Aerys has now become king as King Aerys II, and he loves it. He says, Tywin, will you please be my hand? And Tywin says, absolutely, this is what I've always wanted.
Do I get to drown more people? So, yes.
In 262 AC, he becomes the youngest hand of the king ever. And for around 5 years, this goes great. Aerys parties and has mistresses, and Tywin runs the country. And he's pretty popular because he repeals all of the laws that Aegon V had put in place that took away lords' powers to give the small folk a little bit of a better life. Yeah. Now, in 263 AC, Tywin marries his cousin, Joanna Lannister. Theirs is a very happy marriage. Joanna is said to be the only person who could make Tywin smile and even laugh.
That's kind of nice.
Unfortunately, Aerys also loved or was more obsessed with Joanna Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
He had known her since he had come to court in 259 to serve as a lady companion to his sister-wife, Princess Rhaella. And there were rumors that Aerys and Joanna had slept together at his father Jaehaerys' coronation, and that they had become lovers afterward. Now, Rhaella seems to have believed this, because soon after Joanna's wedding, she dismissed Joanna from her service, and later censured Aerys for, as she put it, turning my ladies into your whores.
Well, that's not subtle at all.
Oh, it gets even less subtle because at the wedding of Joanna and Tywin, Aerys, who was very drunk at that point, said that it was a pity that the Lord's right to the first knight had been outlawed some 2 centuries prior.
Prima nocta.
Yeah, this was an ancient Westerosi custom where a lord or king got to sleep with a new bride of any of his vassals or small folk on her wedding night.
It's also an ancient Braveheart custom.
Also, yeah, yeah, an ancient European custom.
This had been outlawed around 2 centuries prior by King. Pretty embarrassing for the king to say this. Aerys also took what Barristan Selmy called unwanted liberties with Joanna during the bedding ceremony. He doesn't go into detail what that means, but something that made everyone there pretty uncomfortable.
Okay.
Now, in 267 AC, Tywin Lannister dies, and Tywin becomes Lord of Casterly Rock. He publicly dismisses his father's mistress by having her walk through the streets of Lannisport naked. Does that sound familiar?
Shame! Shame!
Actually takes the whole court west for a year. They literally go with him to Casterly Rock from the capital. Unfortunately, after 268 AC, the relationship between Aerys and Tywin starts to deteriorate. Aerys is getting increasingly paranoid, and he starts to see Tywin not as his friend and helper, but as someone who's trying to steal his power. Probably not inaccurately, but also Aerys is a crazy person.
Yep.
Now, in 272 AC, Aerys hosts an anniversary tourney because he's been on the throne for 10 years. And at one point, Joanna and her then, how old were they? 6-year-old twins, Jaime and Cersei, attend this.
Hey, I know them.
You do know them. Yes, you do. So Joanna and her 6-year-old twins attend this anniversary tourney in the capital. And in front of the entire court, Aerys, who again is drunk, asks Joanna if nursing the twins had ruined your breasts, which were so high and proud.
Wow.
Yeah. Joanna is humiliated. Tywin tries to resign. Aerys refuses. Now, the following year, Joanna dies giving birth to Tyrion. Aerys hears about it and basically says, this serves him right. Maybe now he'll learn some humility.
That's basically the last measure. That's a friend. Yeah.
That's basically Tywin's like, you know what? I am done with this relationship. It's also around the time that Aerys starts paying off informers to tell him about Tywin. And around the time that Illyn Payne, who is then the captain of Tywin's guard, lost his tongue for boasting about how Tywin truly ruled the Seven Kingdoms. Illyn later went on to serve as the King's Justice, the headsman, although I believe the actor on the show actually left because he got cancer. Although I think he's recovering now, so yay!
Yay! Happiness in Westeros.
Now, in 276 AC, Tywin hosts a great tourney in the West, ostensibly to celebrate the birth of Prince Viserys, the one who got gold poured on his head by Khal Drogo. But actually, Tywin wants to betroth his daughter Cersei to Prince Rhaegar, the Crown Prince. Aerys refuses. Not only does Aerys refuse, Aerys says, Tywin, you're a great servant. But I mean, come on, you wouldn't betroth your heir to a servant's daughter. Which is not super nice. It's also at this point that Cersei gets a series of prophecies from a fortune teller called Maggie the Frog. She goes to this fortune teller in Lannisport, and asks her three questions. After, by the way, after the fortune teller sucks her blood, but that's a minor point. She asks when she'll marry.
Technicalities.
She asks when she'll marry the prince. Maggie the Frog says, "Never. You're going to marry the king," which Cersei at that point took to mean she would marry Rhaegar when he became king. She then asks, "Well, will the king and I have children?" Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was the third question. The second question is, but I will be queen someday, right? And Maggie the Frog says, yes, queen you shall be until there comes another younger and more beautiful to take from you all you hold dear. And then Cersei says, well, will the king... And Maggie the Frog says...
What was her third question?
She says, will the king and I have children?
Okay.
She says, yes. 6 and 10 for him, and 3 for you. And then she says, gold shall be their crowns, and gold their shrouds. And when your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar will come and put his hands around your pale white throat and choke the life from you.
Now, so, Nina, can I ask a dumb question?
You may ask any question you like, Jason.
What is the Valonqar?
Valonqar, good question.
Okay.
Is a High Valyrian word. It means younger or little brother.
Okay.
Hey.
Uh-oh. Hey. Uh-oh. I think we maybe we know an ending here to a character.
Oh, do we? Do we? Well, doesn't Cersei have one or maybe two younger brothers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the year after Tywin, with his offer for Rhaegar, the Defiance of Duskendale happens. The Darklands of Duskendale invite the king to hear their petition for a town charter, and then when he gets there, kidnaps him and holds him for ransom. Tywin goes and says to the Darklands, listen, if you don't surrender immediately, I will enter your town, I will kill everyone in the town. And everyone outside says, Tywin, if you do that, they'll kill Aerys. And Tywin basically shrugs and says, points to Rhaegar and says, well, we have a better king right here. Aerys does get out, in case you were worried about him.
Nah.
Varys and Selmy rescued him. Don't worry too much. But Aerys is completely unhinged after that. He refuses to let anyone touch him, refuses to get shaved, will not bathe, will not meet Tywin unless all seven Kingsguard are present, and he's even convinced that Tywin helped kill his old friend Stefan Baratheon. Now, Stefan Baratheon died when his ship was caught in a storm off Storm's End, but somehow Tywin was responsible for that.
He's magic.
Magic. Now, in 281 AC, Aerys delivers the ultimate insult to Tywin. He names Jaime to the Kingsguard. You can't refuse a Kingsguard appointment because it's a great honor.
Did Jaime seek it out? Did he give any impressions, or was it just completely out of the blue?
Well, this is the thing. So, Jaime was a very talented, up-and-coming young knight. He had just been knighted by Arthur Dayne, who's also a member of the Kingsguard. Very, very promising. And he was also, at that point, Cersei's lover. They had already become lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Cersei wanted him to stay with her because Cersei told Jaime, you know, Tywin is talking to Hoster Tully. He wants to marry you to Lysa Tully. But she says, I can arrange so that you be named to the Kingsguard, and then you'll stay with me in the capital. And Jaime says, that sounds great. I want to stay with you. Somehow, Cersei finagles her way into getting Jaime named to the Kingsguard. But things didn't super work out for Cersei's plan, because Tywin then resigned and took himself and Cersei back to Casterly Rock.
But a bum.
So that same year, there's the great tourney of Harrenhal in what's called the Year of the False Spring. And it's at this tourney that Jaime is formally invested as Knight of the Kingsguard. But shortly thereafter, he's sent back to King's Landing with Queen Rhaella and Prince Viserys because he was too nervous about the son of Tywin Lannister standing near him with a sword in hand.
Ah, well, he should be.
Yeah,
as he should
turns
be.
Out.
Because in Robert's Rebellion, Tywin is initially neutral. But when Rhaegar dies at the Trident, Tywin gathers his forces and marches to King's Landing. Now, Aerys has sort of the devil and angel on his shoulder here, right? So, it is Varys. Varys is telling Aerys, do not open the gates. Tywin will attack you. Tywin will kill you. Close your gates to him. On the other side is Grand Maester Pycelle. Pycelle says,
oh, okay.
Tywin's your old friend. You've been friends for years. He was your hand for almost two decades. He'll of course be here to save you. Aerys listens to Pycelle. He opens the gates. Tywin sacks the city.
Always listen to Varys.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Now, Aerys had retreated into the Red Keep during the sack of King's Landing, and demands Jaime Lannister bring him Tywin's head. Now, Jaime, over the previous weeks, had heard Aerys' plan with his last hand, a man named Rosser of the Alchemist's Guild. Aerys' plan had been that if the city fell to the rebels, Aerys was going to ignite the hundreds and thousands of jars of wildfire that had been strategically placed all under King's Landing. He was going to have them all ignited and blow up the city.
Well, that's a good plan.
Jaime decides that he can't let thousands of innocent people die in a horrific green explosion and murders Aerys and then tracks down all of the alchemists involved and murders them too. Fun fact, that wildfire, it's still there.
In strategic places?
All throughout King's Landing.
Interesting.
The only people who know about the entire extent are Jaime and Brienne, whom he told it to when they were at Harrenhal together.
Yes.
Even the alchemists don't know how much it goes.
There's no way that doesn't come into play.
Oh, you want to hear another fun fact about wildfire?
Sure.
Yes.
The longer you let wildfire sit,
more
the more volatile it gets.
Ah.
Wow, this and Daenerys sure does have some dragons.
For 20 years.
Yeah. So it's getting stanky.
Also, wildfire gets super potent when dragons are around.
See, I told you.
Yeah. King's Landing's going to explode. But
Nina, that is, like, I will say that, like, that's some fascinating stuff that you're throwing at it. Like you giving us these details, I'm now being like, oh, that's maybe going to come into play in the last book.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about a great fantasy story is if you do it right, you are foreshadowing like a boss. Because everything is always foretold.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Listen, if you put wildfire under your city in your first act, you have to blow it up by the third act.
Chekhov's wildfire?
Now, after the rebellion, Jon Arryn, who was Robert's hand, convinced Robert to marry Cersei to keep Tywin's loyalty. He also persuaded Robert to keep Jaime on the Kingsguard when Eddard Stark thought that Jaime should have gone to the Night's Watch for killing the king.
Because Ned Stark, he walks into the room and sees Jaime standing over the body, right?
And he sees him sit on the Iron Throne.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's on the Iron Throne.
Yes.
Yeah. Eddard thought that he should have gone, even though, of course, he disagrees with Aerys because he burned his father and brother alive. Mm-hmm. He thought that Jaime should have gone to the Night's Watch.
Mm-hmm.
This was a really bad marriage, as you may be aware. Robert was still in mourning for his dead fiance, Lyanna Stark, and even called Cersei Lyanna on their wedding night. Cersei, for her part, was still in love with Rhaegar, and she never forgave Robert for murdering him. So she ensured that he would never have a child by him. Now, this sort of gets us to where we are today, with the Lannisters sort of at the start of a Game of Thrones. Apart from the horrible story of Tyrion's first marriage to Tysha the Crofter's daughter. But that's a little bit of a horrible story. Not sure if I want to tell that one.
Well, and that is something that is addressed in the series of books and the show.
Yeah, because as of where we are right now, we are at the first season of the show. We are at the first book, correct?
Correct. So this takes us through the years of Robert's rule. Tywin is not the hand, but he's always sort of this strong background figure. Cersei is queen, mother to the three nominally Baratheon princes. Jaime is on the Kingsguard, and Tyrion is Tyrion.
There you go. And I think that's all we need to know about House Lannister, because if you want to know anything else, of course, you can read the books and you can watch the show. And you know, that's not what Geek History Lesson is about, telling you about a show.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Thank you, Professor Nina, for this awesome lesson. Round of applause.
I am happy to be here.
And for pronouncing all the names properly.
And for, like, kind of giving us a guide of how we think Game of Thrones might actually end.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Was genuinely surprised. It's so interesting because we've done other houses on Game... I almost called this Game of Thrones.
On Geek History Lesson,
the podcast that we're doing. And you know, I don't think that we got as many revelations onto how the ending. It's so interesting how the Lannisters are so just very cruxily evolved with how this plot's going to go.
Well, I think it's interesting because at the beginning of that first book, I don't think you realize how involved they're actually going to be. I think, especially because they're so unlikable for the most part, you really hope they're going to be shunted off.
Mm-hmm.
But because Westeros is kind of the Murphy's Law of planets, everything sort of seems to keep going their way for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's awesome, Nina. You did a fantastic job.
I am happy. Do you have any lingering Lannister questions?
Well, I would say let's move on into the recommended reading.
Oh, I'm skipping ahead of myself.
No, it's all right. Let's move on to the recommended reading.
We do that all the time.
Let's move on to the recommended reading, and then I think we might have some questions for you in discussion. So,
awesome,
Nina. If of course we all know the six Game of Thrones books, recommended reading is where you want to go. Do you recommend? Are there any other books that illuminate the House Lannister for you?
So, of course, it's the five main novels of the series. I had mentioned two of the Duncan Egg tales, The Hedge Knight and The Sworn Sword. Duncan Egg used to be really hard to get your hands on, but now there is a nice bound volume called The Knight of the Seven Kingdoms that has the first three, the only three published, Duncan Egg tales. Read them. They're really, really good stories, and you can learn a little bit more about Lannister history. You can also read an awesome world book called The World of Ice and Fire, which I would say safely say tripled our knowledge of the whole world and the history of it. And I like 90% of the information for this lesson comes from.
And that's an official book?
That is that's a book in the. How do I explain this? So the premise of the book is that it's written by a maester, originally for Robert and now for Joffrey and then Tommen.
Oh, interesting.
And it goes through the whole history of Westeros and Essos.
Nice. Cool. Nice.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great art in it, too. Super cool. Awesome.
All right, so let's move on into the discussion. Were any lingering doubts, thoughts about, you know, people in Westeros called Frank and Ralph
yeah, for real.
Can be named and said, Ashley, do you have any questions that you want to ask our professor before we let her go?
So my question is, we kind of got onto the thing about Cersei's prophecies and that she has potentially two little brothers. So I wanted to know from both you and Nina whether you think that it's going to wind up being Tyrion or Jaime.
Mm.
Who ultimately brings Nina, what do you her think? Demise.
Well, this is the funny thing, right? So in the fandom, anyone who is a younger sibling of anyone, I think I can safely say, has been put forth as an option for the Valonqar.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Tyrion, not just Jaime, any younger brother. Younger siblings, including Arya, because basically, yeah, kind of going into a little bit, because dragons don't have a sex in Valyrian language, that's now means to some people that no words have genders in Valyrian language. So this could mean younger sister too.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think it's 100% Jaime. I would say Cersei is born first. Jaime comes out holding Cersei's ankle. They're so intertwined. Their stories are linked before birth. And it would be the best sort of poetic irony, or I guess that would be dramatic irony for Cersei, that she lives her whole life fearing Tyrion because she thinks that's the obvious little brother.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the most unobvious candidate? To her, it's Jaime.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be more dramatic to make it Jaime. And I also think it would be interesting for the books and the show to start that these two characters that were lovers in the series,
yeah,
one of them murdering the other, and enemies.
I think they're trying to trick you because we have seen Tyrion kill several people, and he killed Shae with her necklace, sort of, but with his bare hands. So I think that they're trying to do a really good job of meeting that expectation, and because Tyrion is easily the more popular of the two characters. But I really like the idea that it could be anybody's younger sibling. I think that's a very fascinating idea because, like, then Daenerys could be a candidate because she's,
yes,
you know, Rhaegar's younger sibling.
And then Arya, as you said, Nina, yeah, a great choice,
or
too.
Or Bran. Or maybe Rickon will finally have his due.
Or, to be honest with you, Jon Stark.
Yeah.
Or Jon Snow. I'm calling him Jon Stark now. I don't care.
Or the entire free company that's known as the Second Sons, also been put
true
for.
There you go.
Wow.
There you go. That's fascinating. And by the way, they showed that. Well, they changed the scene a little bit, but that scene of her getting the prophecy was in the latest season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
it was in, I don't know what, for some reason.
It was a forest.
They didn't show the Valonqar part, which I don't understand.
It kind of makes me wonder if we're going to come back to that.
I don't know.
Like in a flashback or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, it was interesting because that was the first time that Game of Thrones has, the TV show had did a flashback.
Yeah, yeah.
Was for that scene. And apparently there's going to be some more flashbacks this
season.
You
know you're going to see what happens to Mrs. Sister Stark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that her name? Mrs. Sister Stark?
Mrs. Yes. Sister Stark. Jon Snow Mama.
Probably.
Nina, I have a quick question for you. So looking at the Lannisters.
Right.
For most of the Game of Thrones families or houses, I feel you can generally be like, okay, they're generally good. They're generally bad. Would you classify the Lannisters as a bad house?
No.
You qualify them as good?
No, I don't qualify any of the houses as good or bad.
Just nebulously gray. Mm-hmm.
I consider them all various shades of gray. I think, as with any house, there are really nice people, and there are really not nice people. One of the really nice Lannisters that unfortunately we don't get to meet in person is Tywin's youngest brother, Jaerion Lannister. Jaerion is thought of by both Jaime and Tyrion as their favorite uncle. He's always laughing. He encouraged Tyrion to learn. He taught Tyrion how to tumble when he was little. And around 9 years before the story starts, he decided to go off to Valyria to find Brightroar and never returned.
Oh, so he's the Benjen Stark of this family.
a little bit. But he was very fun-loving. He has a bastard daughter called Joy Hill. And he was a genuinely nice and cool person.
Cool. Well, I think that's going to end it for the discussion. And I think that's going to end it for this entire Geek History Lesson on House Lannister. Nina, thank you so much for getting us prepped
so much
for this season of Game of Thrones. Please let everybody out there on the internet know where they can find you if they want to know more of your musings and everything.
So you can find me most easily on Twitter. I'm at Nina Friel. I am, if you find the picture of me with all of my nice Game of Thrones books and my awesome House Stark t-shirt, that's me. I am always willing to talk Song of Ice and Fire on Twitter, or just generally geeky stuff, and promoting the awesomeness that is Jason and Ashley on there as well.
You can find her on either of our Twitter pages.
I am also, I write a Tumblr, as Jason said at the beginning, a Tumblr called Good Queen Alysanne, because she's my favorite historical figure in Song of Ice and Fire history. Goodqueenally.tumblr.com, Ally, A-L-Y. I answer questions and I write stuff, and every Wednesday I do House Words Wednesdays. So I take a house that doesn't have house words and I give them words.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
And I just want to point out to all of our listeners that Nina is one of our awesome listeners of this podcast. And because she proved that she was such an expert about this subject, that's the reason why we invited her on. So to all of you listeners of Geek History Lesson out there, if you can prove to us that you are an expert on a certain subject, we'll have you on for Geek History Lesson.
I will caveat this. Excuse me. She was also really nice about it.
Yes. Yes. So that's the second point. You can't do this the Westeros way. Hey, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much again, Nina, for teaching us this lesson. And everybody out there, I just want to let you know that you can find Geek History Lesson on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. And do me a favor on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Go down in the comments, leave us a review, because it lets other listeners and awesome listeners like Nina find this podcast. And if you want to make suggestions for future Geek History Lessons, where can they do that, Ashley?
Well, you can do that at geekhistorylesson.com. There are several ways there to contact us. Or facebook.com/geekhistorylesson. There are several different ways there to contact us.
Yes, and you can teach us the secrets of Westeros on Twitter for me, at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. And then you can show Ashley how nice you are at being an expert.
Yeah, you can.
At what Twitter?
You can send me pictures of House Stark at Ashley V. Robinson.
And guys, don't forget, we do an extra podcast, Geek History Lesson, on patreon.com/ Jawin. And I'm just going to let you know, today's Geek History Lesson Extra is going to be with Professor Nina here, where we're going to quiz her about what she thinks the ending of Game of Thrones is.
Ooh.
So it's going to be a really interesting discussion. So hop over to Patreon and support the show, and it's going to be a really good one. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. I'm Jason Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Nina, would you graciously close this lesson on House Lannister out?
For everyone learning about House Lannister, have a great Lannisterific time.